and welcome to another episode of Full Daily. Today I am joined by a special guest who is going to talk to us about being a freelance author, amongst many other things that he's done in his career so far, and he's still young. Mr. Gav Thorpe, hello.
Hello there. Nice of you to say I'm still young.
Well, you're younger than me, Gav.
That's true, yeah, youngish. Yeah.
So, most of people listening to this will probably know who Gav is, but in case someone was an astronaut, perhaps, Gav, who are you and why should people be interested in what you're going to talk about?
Well, for the second one, that's up to them to decide whether they are, I suppose. I worked as a games designer, or in various capacities of a games designer at Games Workshop for 14 years, and then left about 6 years ago. And I've been working full-time freelance since then, mainly as an author for the Black Library, but also doing a little bit of games design and also writing my own original fantasy fiction series, which was published by Angry Robot Books about 4 years ago, over the last 4 years. So I've done lots of writing gigs, I guess you would say, over the last 20 years.
And I suppose we should touch on what you did at Games Workshop. I mean, you pretty much did everything, didn't you?
I suppose. I started as an assistant games developer. And my very, very first job, the day I went in and was sat down and shown my desk, was making mock-ups of the War Gear cards from Dark Millennium, the supplement for 2nd edition 40K. So I joined in the November after, I think, 40K was launched in the October. So that was it. I was there cutting a piece of paper and sticking them to playing cards with things like, you know, virus bomb written on them and stuff like that. So that was my very first job. And a lot of that was playtesting, doing mock-ups, but also we launched the Citadel Journal, which was sort of an odd in-house fanzine, I guess. And that's where we cut our teeth learning to write articles, doing layout, we did the layout and the photography ourselves. And that was for a year or so, just over a year. And then I spent a couple of years with White Dwarf, again, as a staff writer, layout guy, all round dog's body and photographer and everything else. And we pretty much sort of put lots of our own articles together and then it was edited. And then went back to games development. So that was about 3 years in as a games developer. And there my first sort of main range job there was writing the Sisters of Battle Codex. So that was my first. I'd written, as an assistant games developer, I'd written a few things for Warhammer Quest and obviously lots of articles for White Dwarf, mainly for some of the secondary systems, so for Epic and for Warhammer Quest, Necromunda, things like that. But that was my first sort of 40K or Warhammer project was Codex Sisters of Battle, which was immense fun. Working with Brian Nelson and Jez Goodwin were the primary miniatures designers on that project. So that was a great introduction to working with the miniatures designers in that regard. And then after that, after a few years of that, we divided the games development team down into two, well, three actually. There was the Warhammer team, the 40K team and the Lord of the Rings team. And I became Warhammer Lore Master, which meant I was running the Warhammer team. So as well as overseeing the content of the army books and the rule books, was also helping work out the release schedule, working, just doing planning work with the miniatures designers in terms of what the range was and all sorts of other stuff. And then my last role, well, for a while I was then lead background developer, which meant I was sort of overseeing the background presentation and of both Warhammer and 40K. A lot of that was liaising with the Black Library licensees, things like that. No, I wasn't the IP manager. That's Alex. That was Alan Merritt, who's still there. But basically just sort of giving a heads up, I suppose, to, you know, problem areas or when people want to know some obscure piece of lore, I'd be the one who kind of knew where to look it up. And then finally, I sort of finished back in games development straight, finished off with a couple of Warhammer Army books and a couple of codexes. And that's when I kind of decided 14 years was quite a long time to be in one place. The studio I worked in had changed quite a lot, and I decided I wanted to kind of set out on my own, really.
So, right, so that's an interesting thing. I mean, I've talked to other people who sort of left Games Workshop around that time, and it was, you know, various reorganizations and stuff. But you made the decision yourself to sort of, that it was time to go out in a different direction.
A little from column A, a little from column B, I think. But the for their part, GW needed somebody else, really. I mean, I was quite well paid by that point, but the scope of the work I was doing, you know, as a senior, you know, being paid to be a senior games developer, but really there wasn't anything senior about what they wanted me to do, because they weren't creating new games like Inquisitor or you know, or the secondary game systems and things. So it was more a standard games developer role. So in essence, they were kind of overpaying me for the job I was doing. And for me, it was coming back and redoing the Dark Elves army book, I suppose. I enjoyed doing it and it was a great project, but basically the future was going to be redoing projects I'd already done before. So there was kind of an agreement, really, that my time there and the way that things were currently working, my time there kind of run its course, and I was happy to sort of leave on good terms. You know, there was no bad blood particularly. It was just one of those, I needed more excitement and kind of more of a creative challenge, I suppose, and they needed somebody, or rather they didn't need somebody with my qualifications or my experience necessarily doing a much more lower level job. So it made sense at the time, and it gave me a chance, I suppose, to sort of look at other options, really.
Right, I'm going to digress, which is generally what we do on this show, as regular listeners will know. I forgot that you did Inquisitor.
Mm. Yeah, that was one of mine, yep.
I'd forgotten that. How did you feel about that game? Because it's a great game. How did you feel that when... I suppose it wasn't as embraced as much as I suppose you would hope. And I wonder if you think that the decision to do the bigger scale figures contributed to that, or it just was not the right market for that sort of game at that time.
I think that there's a number of contributing elements which kind of ended up sort of eroding the popularity of Inquisitor. The idea from the start was it would be a 54mm game. That was the inspiration, was sort of the Wild West skirmish games and that size of figure. And it was very much a modelling, you know, converting your own guy, personalising your warband and things. So it wasn't a decision we made later to, you know, I didn't sort of suddenly find out we were going to be putting these big figures in. I think the figures themselves worked fine, actually, and people were happy to kind of convert them. And I suppose, you know, in terms of outlay, getting one figure as opposed to 10 figures, you know, in terms of putting an army or a force together, was pretty much, you know, on par. But the problem, one of the problems was scenery. And because it was very narrative and you wanted lots of different exotic locations and things, it's very difficult for people. They couldn't just take their Warhammer battlefield or their 40k battlefield and then suddenly start running big guys around it. You had to have there was a lot of effort in creating the physical requirements for each scenario that you created. It was very, you know, so I think that kind of put people off a bit. And one of the reasons why it's worked better when people have done it, sort of Inquisitor 28, that just being able to reuse scenery they've already got and have different layouts. I think the other problem for me was the support, the follow-up, particularly when it went to Fanatic Games or the, you know, sort of like the specialist games division, as it were. Some of their releases were hit and miss. Some were fantastic miniatures, and some were and were individuals, and they were kind of really fitted with the ethos of Inquisitor, which was delving past the battle game into sort of like the underbelly of the Imperium particularly, but also some other races. But there was other stuff in there which was just, you know, translated directly from 40K. You know, the Pure Strain Gene Stealer I didn't think was particularly great. And again, how do you role play a Pure Strain Gene Stealer? There wasn't that narrative element to them. And also I think we could have done a lot more helping people with the converting. So providing spare heads, weapons, guns. We didn't really, you know, we couldn't justify the expense of, or the capital expense of going into plastics. But I think a lot of the kind of, some of the early miniatures were designed with a lot of customization in mind, or theoretically customization in mind, that wasn't really followed up. So it made it harder. I suppose it put more barriers in the way of people being able to convert and create their own warband. So, yeah, those are the main reasons. I think the game itself, people kind of got their heads around the narrative idea and having a games master, that all worked fine. But it's the physical side of putting a warband together and about, you know, and a battlefield for each scenario sort of just made it harder to play. And it's a very much a, because there isn't army lists, I suppose. Army lists give you lots of armchair gaming. You can sit down and design an army again and again and again without ever buying a toy soldier or rolling a dice. Whereas Inquisitor is one of those where you can create characters and have a bit of fun and things, but actually the enjoyment's on the tabletop. It's getting together and acting out that story. You know, it's very much a tabletop game rather than an armchair game, if that makes sense.
No, no, it does. Are you ever tempted to sort of go back to, not necessarily Inquisitor because of obviously IP stuff, but that sort of skirmish type game yourself? You know, take the new hotness that is skirmish gaming, add it to Kickstarter and have the new Gav Thorpe game.
It's tempting. I suppose it's one idea to throw into all of the other ideas I'd like to do. it would depend on the setting and things. For me, skirmish games and role-playing games, I don't, you know, the mechanics and the setting have to be sort of interlinked. There needs to be something about the way it plays that says something about the world it's set in, I guess. So for sort of 40K, it was generally sort of like the way the psychics worked and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm up for writing anything, really, and having a go. I'm not sure, because it's so miniatures-based, that would be the tricky bit. I don't think you can solve that. I think the difficulty is there's a lot you can just do with a role-playing game. I mean, and they did, you know, Fantasy Flight kind of, not necessarily mechanically, but took the ethos of Inquisitor with Dark Heresy and kind of carried that forward. And you get rid of the downsides, which is trying to create and maintain a miniatures range and keep the narrative aspect. So I suppose I'm not sure. I think I would still like to do a fairly nitty-gritty skirmish game. I think that'd be cool. One of the inspirations was Rogue Trader, you know, lots of percentage tables and D10s and things like that. It was very deliberately reminiscent of that clunky, clunky mechanisms and things like that almost. Not deliberately so, but, you know, rolling percentile dice and things is a lot different to a lot of the more modern game systems, which are very slick. And I think that characterization and the grit you can put into that kind of system, there is an appeal there. It's, I suppose, it would be the miniature support would be the tricky bit.
Yeah. Do you still play games?
I do. I've not played miniatures for quite a while. I've not played 40K and Warhammer. In fact, the last game, funnily enough, talking to you, but pretty much the last miniatures game I played was a couple of years ago, which was a game of Malifaux at NovaCon in Washington. I played two whole games that weekend of Malifaux, and I was very impressed and wanted to play it more. And then just with everything else, never got round to it. I've just backed a load of stuff for the World of Twilight on Kickstarter, which is looking entertaining and very different. That's why I really like it. Talking to a couple of people, I know they're saying the system's different and entertaining as well. So I'm trying to kickstart my miniatures vibe with that. But mostly it's board games, card games. Still play a lot of games like that. Well, until the little one turned up.
Things like Zombicide, stuff like that.
I have played that. I suppose it's all sorts of games really, from stuff like Zombicide and then sort of more Euro style games, Small World and stuff like that. I enjoy playing games and particularly the social aspect of playing games, regardless of what the system is. So, for me, you know, whether it's Toy Soldiers, there's quite a lot of effort goes into it. And I'd love to kind of get back into the flow of painting Toy Soldiers. I go through phases just like everybody else does, I suppose, and paint up. I've done some 15mm sci-fi stuff recently, but we're going to invent a game system around that. I've been helping a friend, guy called Carl Brown, working on a skirmish system called Open Combat, which is sort of a generic, I don't want to use the generic, but it's an open system, that's why it's called Open Combat, which allows you to do sort of either fantasy or sort of pre-gunpowder skirmishes. And that's quite fun, actually. So if he can actually get himself sorted out and see that published, I quite enjoy doing some more with that. So I suppose I still enjoy creating games as much as I do playing them. I wrote Cutlass for Black Scorpion a couple of years ago, their pirate skirmish game.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of those where I did something a bit different. sort of, as a games designer, you kind of pick up mechanics, you think of stuff as you're going along, you don't necessarily get to use them straight away. And that was one where I had an idea of, you know, using different dice to represent the attributes and kind of a game system that's found its home in Cutlass. So, yeah, it's as much, I suppose, about inventing games for myself that maybe over the next year or two might see the light of day as it is playing other people's games off the shelves.
So we talked that it was, you know, it wasn't really a massive decision for you to leave GW. It was sort of a natural point.
It felt massive at the time. I mean, I'd been there 14 years and it's going from, you know, a steady job and an environment that I'd known to working for myself. It was exciting and terrifying at the same time. And that's why I did it, I suppose. It was working in the studio was very, there was a good big safety net, you know, creatively. It wasn't like the codex wouldn't get written. It's not like, you know, certain things wouldn't get done and I wouldn't get paid or things like that. Whereas, but also that it came with, you know, sort of restraints on what you could do. Whereas I wanted to exercise a bit more creativity in what I was doing in terms of my own sort of thoughts. But with that comes that lack of a safety net, the lack of having a regular wage. So, you know, it was an interesting time. But looking back, you know, it felt more traumatic, I suppose, just because life-changing things like that always do. But actually, it's the best thing that happened at the time. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to change the way the last few years have gone.
Yeah, and you still live local in that area, yeah?
Yeah, I live just outside, sort of like halfway between Nottingham and Derby, so...
So you still get to see your old mates and things?
Yeah, exactly. Still pop in and see people that I worked with. People still work there even. And it's kind of convenient because, you know, being able to go and see the editors at Black Library or the meetings that we have, it's nice just being able to drive 20 minutes rather than, you know, get on a plane or a train or whatever. And I just like this area. You know, I like Nottingham. I moved up here when I was 19. So I've now been here longer than when I was living in Stevenage where I grew up. So this is kind of my home. You know, I've met my partner here. I've had my child here now. So this is, for the moment, at least anyway, where we are. You know, it's kind of it's like when people go to university or things like that. You know, they relocate their lives sometimes. And
yep.
And that's what Nottingham is for me. This is where... It's where I did all my proper growing up, I suppose.
That's where you did all your proper drinking.
Well, that's true, yeah. It's where I was, yeah. Although a lot of those places don't exist anymore as well, but that's another story.
the trip must still be there.
The trip's still there, the Salutation's still there, Rock City's still there. So, you know, most of the major ones have survived in some fashion or other, so... Now, there's still plenty of good places to go drinking in Nottingham, certainly.
I once was not allowed into the Rock City for being too smart.
Ah, well, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, yeah, if you're wearing nice shoes or a shirt.
Yeah, the only club ever that I've been barred for being too smart.
That sounds about right. So, I remember the Salutation's a nice pub now, but I remember when it used to like have camo netting on the ceiling. And, it's a bit sort of Wetherspoons is now, but not in terms of clientele, just in terms of look.
All right, so we're well over our 15 minutes.
That's all my lap, I'm sure.
Oh no, that's it. We'll just leave that. That gets left in. We don't do edit. We don't do very much editing on this show. Only if you swear, then I'll edit you. next episode we'll talk about the whole freelance author thing and how you actually write a book.
Okay.
So until then, I've been Mike.
I've been Gav.
And we'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter. We're at Fools_Daily or via email foolsdaily@outlook.com.